All right, you guys, welcome to How to Write a Brilliant Romance. We're very, very excited to have you guys here. We know it's going to be a really great day and a half with you guys as we help you build an epic romance. It's going to be fun to kind of go through all of the pieces that make a great romance. Now, the thing is that as a author, I've written in many, many different genres, historicals and thrillers and mysteries and contemporary and, and all sorts of even chick lit. But all of my books have had some sort of romance thread. Either they've been a straight up romance or they've been romantic suspense or they've been, a mystery with a thread or they've had, even my chick lit had threads of romance in it. And so I really love romance. Romance is sort of where my heart beats because first of all, I'm an extremely romantic person, and so I love that. But I really feel like the world is a romantic place. I think people want to find true love. They want to connect with people. And writing a romance is, for one, romance is the number one selling genre in the world. It accounts for 1.1 or 1.51 billion sales and is the largest share of the consumer market at 14.3%. And why is that? That's because people still want to believe that happily ever after can happen. And more than that, even more than just the belief, they love the feeling of falling in love. I don't know about you guys, but I love to read a novel and at the end go, oh, I feel so happy and good now because these two got together. So for me, writing a romance is about falling in love again, and I enjoy that. But that's also how it is for many, many, many readers. Now, there are different kinds of romances out there, but I think the romances that we all really gravitate to are those ones that take us deeper. We like the sexual attraction and we like the fun things that happen, but we are really looking for something that goes a little bit deeper in the story, something that tugs at our heart, something that makes us feel something that's more than just, fluttering heart, but rather that these two people that have gotten together have connected on a really deep level, that they've healed each other's wounds, they've given each other a sense of their greatest the greatest dream. And for some reason, these two belong together more than any other two people in the whole world. And so when we write a romance, we need to think beyond just the, boy meets girl and fun things happen. We need to start thinking about why do these two belong together? Why are these two the only two people for each other in the world? And how is this romance going to heal deep wounds and give them their deepest desires and their deepest dreams? So that's really what we're talking about, is a story that goes beyond, let's say, the usual, the story that people, and I think romance gets a really bad rap because people are like, oh, it's just a romance. Well, I'm sorry, but all of our great movies that we love are romances. I mean, think of Titanic and Pearl Harbor and Casablanca, right? They're all romances and people love those. And why do they love them? Is because those people have gotten, their lives have changed because of the other person in their lives. So a romance really is about creating great expectations. It's about putting those things into your story that readers love. They love, for example, the meet cute, the way that the hero and the heroine meet. They love the drama of how they fell in love and the tension that happens as that occurs. They love the romantic tension. We do like to have that sort of, he's very cute, she's very cute, are they going to ever kiss, that sort of thing. We like to have we like to feel the angst of a breakup. Now, I know you guys are like, oh, I don't like it when they break up. But you need to have the breakup, and we're going to talk about why, in order for the reader to experience that happy ever after ending, that triumphant moment. So all of these things are important in a romance, and reading a great romance is about the expectation that we have that it's going to fill us up on the inside and that it's going to be something that changes us and makes an impact on us. So what goes into a great romance? Well, of course, heroes and heroines. We're going to be talking a lot about what they are and how to build a great hero and heroine. Tension and sparks. So a great romance isn't smooth sailing. So, in real life, we love to have the smooth sailing romance and we want to have that, no problems. We just want to fall in love and live happily ever after. But in a great romance, that's not what happens. You need to have sparks. You need to have tension because these two, for one, that's what drives the story. The reader's not going to read something that's not very filled with tension that, you know, is boring. They're going to be like, well, these two are going to live happily ever after. And even though we know it's a romance and we know that's how it's going to end, we do want to see how they get there, right? So tension is important. We also want to see sparks. We love a great romance that has a lot of sparks in it. So I want you to think right now of some of your favorite romances and the sparks that they had. And I had a lot of fun putting together some, as I was putting together the class, you know, just revisiting some of my favorite movies, like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. I mean, that's just such a fun, fun movie. And so many sparks, positive and negative, that happen. And they, these two spar really well. Same with While You Were Sleeping, right? Tons of fun sparks in that. And sparks can be negative things, the reasons that they fight, but it also can be, you know, fun things, the ways that they connect. We also, excuse me, are looking for tender moments, right? So we want to have those moments that make us go, oh, I really love how these two interacted. I see that he starts to understand her heart and she's starting to understand his. And so we want to have those sweet moments. We do need to have a breakup in a romance, because without the breakup, we don't know that love is going to last, and we can't have the triumphant ending. A breakup also contributes to a character's change and growth as a person, and we want to see that happen, and we can't do it unless they break up. And we're going to get to the breakup and the black moment and structure in just a second. And then finally, we need to have the happily ever after, but it's more than just these two end up together. It's how they complete each other. It's how they give each other their greatest dreams. It's how that they heal their wounds. And those are the stories that really touch us. All right, so let's get going. And let me touch on the fact that a lot of people say, oh, romances are formulas. Well, the fact is that, yes, there is a formula. And when I say a formula, I mean a list of ingredients. You have a list of ingredients, the same kind of things that go into every romance. You've got the meet cute, you've got the need for them to spend time together, you've got great dialogue and sparks, you've got some sexual tension. You have the breakup, the happily ever after ending. Sure, you have all of those things. But just like a perfumer has a formula of ingredients that they use to put together a perfume, every perfume is different based on the person that's cooking it, so to speak. Or like, for example, chocolate chip cookies. Everybody makes their chocolate chip cookies a little bit different, unless they follow, of course, the Toll House recipe on the back of the bag. So the idea is that everybody has their own take about how they put stuff together. So yes, it's a formula. And yes, you're going to use the same ingredients, but your ingredients and your voice and the way you look at things and the way you craft characters is going to make your romance unique. It's going to be just something that only you can write. And that's why, you guys, you have favorite authors. You have authors that are like, oh, she just can deliver the this romance. And the funny thing is that I can read two stories that are the same kind of story, and I'll love one because of the voice and the characters, and the other one and the writing, and the other one will be like, oh, I don't know. Why? Just because of my personal preference. And so everybody has their own little way of doing it. And so your story will be unique, even if we all wrote the very same story, even if we all decided we're going to write a Beauty and the Beast kind of story. So we're going to learn the formula, we're going to learn the ingredients, and then we're going to learn how to make them different for each one of our stories. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the story. Now, by the way, I do want to say that there is a workbook. I don't know if you guys downloaded it. I know that some of you did. And so as we go through, I'll try to let you know what pages that we're on here. Let me just grab up the workbook here. We're just kind of going through the first section here on the first session, right? So we're on page 5. So when we're putting together a plot and a romance, there are three things. First of all, you think about the story plot, so the external plot. And the external plot acts as our spine. It's the circumstances that we're going to drive our character through that's going to cause him, first of all, it's going to create tension in the story as we move him forward through these circumstances, and he's got to make changes, and he's got to be challenged, and he's got to fail and get back up and all of these kind of things. The external plot is the backbone of the story. It's that external thing that's going to make him think about his life and think about if he wants to fall in love and think about how he wants to change and all of those things. If you do not have an external plot, you do not have a spine, and your whole story falls apart, just like our bodies would fall apart without a spine, right? So you have to have that external plot. Your characters have to walk on the scene, and they have to want something, and they have to have a goal, and they have to go towards that goal. We're going to be talking about that external plot in just a second. Now, we also have an internal plot, and the internal plot is the journey that your character is on. See, the point of the external plot isn't for him to save the world or save the, you know, stop the nuclear disaster or, you know, I don't know, win the ranch, you know, whatever it is. That's not the point of your story. It's the goal of the plot. But the point of your story is to make your character go from a place where he's broken and flawed and believes a lie and is empty in his life to a place where he is changed and his life is, he's a new person and his life is full and happy and better, right? And that is actually what the journey of life is so much about, right? It's about how we go from here to over here, and we have to go through circumstances to get there. So the internal plot is the substance of the story. It's why we're going through the story. Now, the romance works as glue between the external plot and the internal plot. It helps us understand it helps us deal with the emotions of combining the external and internal plot. It also adds deeper resonance. What happens is that a great story has external plot, and the romance comes on top of it, and it becomes the focal point of the story, but it's not the focal point of the story as we begin. And why is that? Because we don't want our characters to walk into the story and just be sort of like walking around the page, and then one day romance happens. Oh, good, this is great. Now they have a purpose in life. No, this is a flim-flammy character that we don't like, because we need to have characters that move forward, that want something for a good reason and take action. And then along the way, ba-bang, here comes a romance. Oh, this is fantastic. It deepens the story. It deepens their life. And in the end, they start to realize that's why they were on the journey in the first place. But if they start out just saying, oh, I really want to fall in love and I really want to get married, even though that might be something in the back of their minds, it doesn't make for a strong story. So what we're going to do is we're not writing real life here. In real life, sure, we could say, I want to get married and I'm going to go and I'm going to sign on to eHarmony and I'm going to find somebody and I'm going to get married. That's great. But that doesn't necessarily make for a great romance. And so we're going to craft a great story. We're going to put the romance on top of it. And then what's going to happen is that they're going to change and grow as a result. Now, a great part of this is the fact that all of this rotates around a story and a theme. And so as we get deeper into it, we're going to be talking about story question and really what is your story truly about. And when you have a story question and when you have a theme for your story, that's when you start to make an impact with your story. It's not just about these two getting together. It's about these two getting together and learning the truth that then your reader starts to take away and go, I wonder if that truth applies to me as well. And so what happens is that story starts to dig into their heart and becomes a much stronger story simply because it had a theme and a story question attached to it. All right, so we're going to keep going, and I'm going to start with explaining to you guys the external plot. Now, for you, there's a lot of people here that I've seen before that know a lot about this. And so this is why we're doing this tonight, so that you guys, it's Friday night, and you're like, well, I've been working all week long, so I realize that you might be a little tired and stuff. So this is the part where you're like, yeah, Susie, we know that. But here's the thing. For me, as an author who's written 54 books now, I still have to go through and go, okay, what's my external plot? I have to make sure that lines up before I can start moving everything else into place. So it could be a good refresher for you guys. So in my book therapy world, we call this external plot the Lindy Hop. Now, it's just an acronym that I use, but I'm a dancer, so I like that. And it also helps me teach it without having to look at my notes. So it's a fun acronym that I use. So let's go through this a little bit, and you guys can see how an external plot gets together. Now, I'm going to ask you to watch A Walk in the Clouds tonight, if you possibly can, and hopefully you have already watched it. It's a fabulous story. It's an older story. It came out in 1995, so I do realize it's a little bit older, but I feel like it's a great example of how the external plot and the internal plot go together, and the romance is the glue between them. So remember, a story is always about what a character wants and how the external journey puts them through an internal journey of change. And so as we start our story, our characters are separate and they each want something separately, right? Now, a romance is the emotional glue that holds these two journeys together. It's not just about the journey of the heart, but the journey of personal change. So as we start our story, our characters start in what we call life. They enter the story already fully formed, already with their issues in mind, already having the lies that they believe and their broken backstories and some experience with life. But they walk onto the page fully formed, and we meet them in this first snapshot of what we call life, where they're interacting in their everyday. And in this particular story, we have Paul, and Paul is the story is set in 1945, and Paul is an army sergeant, and he's returning to San Francisco to reunite with his wife Betty, who he married following a whirlwind courtship the day before he departed for the Pacific. And the very first scene is him getting off the boat, and he's talking with another soldier, and they really, you know, just tell us everything that's happening right away. The soldier's like, so basically you met her on Friday and you got married on Sunday and you shipped off on Monday, right? And Paul's like, yeah, pretty much it. And he says, will you recognize her? And Paul says, oh, I know her anywhere. And so what happens is he comes back and there's no one waiting for him. She's not there. So there's this wonderful moment where he's standing alone on the pier and he kind of, everyone else has people to greet them and he doesn't. And he goes back to his apartment where he's left this woman, and she's sitting in her underwear and she's like reciting. She's trying to speak well because she's got this record. She's taking this class. And he comes in and she's so excited to see him when we think everything's going to be fantastic. Well, the problem is that she says, well, I didn't know you were coming home. And he says, but I wrote you, didn't you get my letter? And she says, oh, the letters, there were so many of them. And they were so depressing. I just couldn't read them after you sent the first couple. And so, you know, I didn't read them. But I'm really glad you're here. Right now, he's really upset about this. He's like, how could you not have read my letters? They're all about me and my life and what I want. And she says, oh, I know what you want. And we're here together now. It'll be fine. And I got back and you can go sell chocolate and this sort of thing. But that's not really what he wants to do. However, he has a lot of scars from his wartime, and he just wants to be happy. He just wants to have a family and start his life. And so he decides, okay, I'm going to go sell chocolate. Now, this is where we say, what's going on with him? Why would he stay with this woman? Well, it's because our hero has some backstory in our hero, and we find this out as we move into the story. But he was an orphan, grew up in a home, and really didn't have anybody. And so this woman represents his lifeline, his family that he wants to have. And he wants to have a family and a home. And normally it'd be like, okay, dude, have bigger aspirations, but really that's a huge aspiration for a man who's been an orphan. So for him, that's what he wants. And that's what I love about the simplicity of this story, is that it's just about him having this simple aspiration and how miraculously it happens. So Paul's reunion with Betty is strained, and especially after he discovers that although he has written her almost every day, she stopped reading them after the first few letters, and keeps the hundreds of unopened letters in a footlocker. He is determined to make a go of the marriage, however, and hopes to establish a new career for himself. She insists he sell chocolates door to door, so he says yes to her and sets off for Sacramento. Okay, so what happens is that he's setting off for Sacramento, and he gets on a train. And when he gets on the train, he sees this woman, and she's very beautiful, and she's trying to lift a suitcase over her head, and it falls and it opens and all her underwear and stuff is there, and he helps her. And this is this moment where the train jerks and he kind of lands on top of her in a very moment, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry. And she gets up, and then she throws up all over him. and we find out later she's pregnant, but we don't really know why. So now he's cleaned himself off. He's been really nice about it. But what happens is that in his normal everyday life, something's happened. Now, when you're dealing with a romance, it can be, the inciting incident can be the romance. Now, for our hero, his everyday life is, I'm going to go sell chocolates. And so in this situation, he meets the girl. And this is what we call the meet cute, right? Where they first meet the first time. Now, he continues to meet her. And his inciting incident, because it is a romance, is a romantic inciting incident. He meets the girl. However, it also merges with his noble quest, which we're going to see in just a second. All right. So, by the way, when you're writing a romance, you have to have a life for both your hero and your heroine. Okay, now in this particular instance, in this movie, we started with Paul. We got a lot of his life in his home world, and then we had the inciting incident, and now we meet Victoria. All right. So Victoria Aragon is a graduate whose Mexican-American family owns a vineyard in the Napa Valley, and she's on she's on the train and later on a bus to go home, and she's harboring a dark secret, and that is that she's pregnant by her professor who has left her. So she's really, really worried about going home. So he gets on the next bus and he smells like vomit, and she is there on the next bus and he says hi, and they sit down, they talk, and there's some ruffians that get on board with her shortly thereafter, and they sort of harass her, and he has a Boy Scout moment, which we're going to talk about in just a bit. But the Boy Scout moment is when your hero does something heroic that makes us instantly like him, even though he might do something bad. Now, in a few minutes, our hero is going to, he helps her, he's going to get kicked off the bus, and he's going to start walking towards Sacramento. And a little ways down the road, he's going to come across this girl who's sitting on her suitcase crying. Right. And so now he's met her three times and he says to her, we really ought to exchange names. Right. So she says yes. And so he sits down with her and he finds out her story and the fact that she's pregnant by this professor. And that's when he says, well, I'll go with you and I will pretend to be your husband. Now, it's a good thing we had that Boy Scout moment because we see that he's an honorable guy. Because otherwise we'd be like, why is he doing that? What's going on with that? Do we trust that? You know, this sort of thing. And of course we do, because it's you know, Keanu Reeves, and he's, well, in this story, he's trustworthy. But the point is that he's, you know, the hero of the story, but we still need to establish that he is a good guy. So having that Boy Scout moment really helps us understand that. So he learns that she's pregnant by her professor. He offers to introduce himself to her very traditionalist family as her husband. And the plan is simply, I'm going to go with you. I will say I'm your husband. And then I will sneak away like a jerk in the night. And then you will be off. You'll be scot-free. You'll be off the won't be a problem. And your parents will forgive you and they'll blame it on me. And of course, it's very, very noble. And we love that. So that's his quest. He's going to go and do this nice thing for her. And really, his motivation is simply he feels sorry for her. He understands what it feels like to be rejected by people. He was rejected by his parents. He was an orphan where his parents died. We don't really know. And he was rejected by his wife. And so he's a heroic guy. And he was in the military. He was a soldier. So all of this combines to give him good motivation to do this. Your hero needs to have a noble quest. And in this particular case, it's twined up with the girl. It's a romance. It doesn't always have to be entwined with the it can be a romance, and still his noble quest can still be to save the ranch, you know, and it might not have anything to do with her. But what'll happen, as we see coming up, that they need to spend time together, your hero and heroine. So if he has a separate goal that doesn't include her, well, then you'll need to have them have a reason to spend time together. And eventually that goal will come around and it will include her in some way. So, for example, one of my favorite books is a book by Suzanne Brockman. It's one of her really old books named Prince Joe. It's a great story about this guy who's a Navy SEAL, and his job is to protect this lookalike prince who looks just like him. And so his goal has nothing to do with the heroine, who is the prince's assistant and has to train Joe in order to look like and act like the prince, right? So it has nothing to do with it. Well, they get together in this course of the book, but the thing is Prince Joe needs her because he needs her help in becoming this prince and this lookalike, right? So the challenge is that if they have an external goal that doesn't, you know, it involve necessarily saving the girl, then you have to put them together in a different way. So we'll get more to that in a little bit as well. All right. So I'm trying to get rid of this this light. I'm sorry, it's from my blinds, and it's like I'm keep going further over like this. So anyway, I can go like this. That's maybe a better way. So anyway, all right. Sorry about that, you guys. I didn't. I usually teach this class at 7, and so the sun is down, and now it's an hour earlier. So, all right. Once we've launched them onto their noble quest, then we have trouble. And this is where all the fun stuff happens in Act Two. And so this is like the meat of the story. It's where they make bad decisions or good decisions. It's where they have truth tellers that help them change and grow. It's where they have all of those essential romance scenes that we're going to talk about. It's where they have a man in the mirror moment where they realize who they are and who they want to be. It's where all the rising action takes place. And so Act Two is where this starts. And so Act One is life inciting incident noble quest. They launch under their noble quest. And then in Act Two, we have what's called trouble. Okay. So this is the disappointments that happen along the way. So Victoria's father, Alberto, is infuriated, not only that she has married a man below her social standing, but without his permission as well. Paul's initial plan to quietly slip away and continue on his journey, leaving her family to believe he abandoned her, is derailed when her grandfather, Don Pedro, encourages him to stay and help with the harvest. Now, we're going to pause here and say that the inciting incident is really also where we start the internal journey. It's where things start to awaken. And we're going to talk about the internal journey in just a little bit. But in our hero's heart, what does he really want? Well, he was an orphan. And so what he really wants is family. And we see that by his agreement to go out and sell chocolates to make his wife that he married over 3 days happy. And but now Don Pedro is inviting him into a family, and it starts to stir his deepest desire. And now this is where we really start to get into the story. All right. So during the harvest, Paul, an orphan, grows closer to the family and learns the joys that come with their traditions, roots, and ways of life. So he keeps trying to leave, like he's going to leave. And then, you know, he realizes that she needs him to stay just a little bit longer. So they put him up so the family puts him up in the same room, and he sleeps on the floor. But, you know, there's some hilarity that ensues when the parents want to come in and say goodnight to them. So they get into bed and pretend to be together, but it's all honorable. And the next day he ends up staying a little bit longer because Don Pedro ropes him into staying. And then, so he stays another night, and then there's a frost, and they need help on the vineyard so that it doesn't freeze the grapes. And so the girl teaches him a little bit about how to do that, and he gets roped into the situation further and further. So what happens is that he ends up prolonging his stay, which prolongs the tension between them because they're starting to fall in love. But also the fact that he is already married and she knows that, and so does he. And so that's a problem because he's an honorable guy, right? And as he stays longer, guess what? He wants to stay longer because he gets to know the family and he likes them and they start to like him. Now, the father has a really hard time coming around, but Don Pedro and the mom and the siblings, everybody loves him and thinks he's great. Well, that's a problem. It's interesting to me that this story structure is somewhat similar to While You Were Sleeping, because we have the same situation. Orphan girl gets roped into the family over Christmas, and the longer she stays with them, the longer she likes to be with them, and the more it stirs that awakening in her heart. It was kind of funny. I usually teach on While You Were Sleeping, and I decided to change it up, but I realized it was very similar, the structure. So apparently that works. So he and Victoria try to ignore their growing attraction and the feelings for each other, but with little success. And so, and you can see them continue to grow. So shortly thereafter, they have a scene where they're picking grapes. And then there's this scene where there's grape smashing with the feet, and only married people can smash the grapes, apparently. So you know, he lifts her up and puts her in the grape bin, and then other people will put him in the grape bin. And then they have this moment afterwards where they realize that they're in love with each other, and they run back to her room and they're kissing, and it's a pretty good kissing scene. And then he realizes, no, wait, I'm married, and leaves her there, and she's crying. We're actually going to see that scene. But, you know, it's this emotional moment. And that's when he realizes, I've gotten in way too far and I have got to leave her. So what happens now is that you're always leading up to what we call the black moment event. And the black moment event is that black moment when your hero's worst fears come true. Now, in a romance, you also have a breakup, which is a romantic Black moment. But in order to have, and sometimes those are combined with your Black moment event, but sometimes they're not. And in this particular movie, it's not. They have a breakup where he leaves her because he knows he's married, and they pretend, they continue on with the ruse that he's going to leave her. So he does. And then he goes back and he realizes that he loves her. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. He realizes he loves her, and he gets freed from the marriage because his wife has given him an annulment. And he comes back. But by this time, he's a bad guy because he's left this woman that was supposedly his wife. And they do find out that they're not really married. And so the father is furious with him. He comes back and he's like, how could you do this? You've dishonored me. You've dishonored your family. You've dishonored our family. You've dishonored yourself. I would never let you be a husband to my daughter. And it's a terrible, bad moment where he realizes he's done. He wants his family. He's done, you know, this courageous thing, so to speak, but also he has done kind of a dishonorable thing in lying to them. And he just all comes back to him, and he realizes that he can't have what he wants, which is Victoria. And that's, and so the breakup happened when he left Victoria, but this is this Black moment when he realizes he's not going to get anything that he wants. And that is always contrasted with his greatest desire. So his greatest desire is to have a family. Guess what? He's not going to get it, right? All right, so there's when Paul returns, an argument with the angry and drunk Alberto leads to a disastrous fire which destroys the vineyard or the vineyard. All right, so throughout this whole thing, excuse me, we've seen Paul have nightmares. Now, Paul has nightmares from his time overseas and in the Pacific, and they all relate to fire. Okay, so and bombing and losing children, and it's really a representation of his own life and how he lost everyone. So what happens is that the drunk dad throws this lantern into this vineyard, and he's out of anger, and the whole vineyard goes up in flames, right? So Paul's looking at this and he's like, oh my goodness. And you know, even though he's got fears of fire, he runs into the vineyard and he starts to try to put it out, but the vineyard just blows up. It just absolutely, and everybody's trying to save it. All the family runs out, Victoria runs out, everybody runs out to try to save it, and they can't. And the whole vineyard, all these years and heritage, goes up in flames, which is a terrible moment for Paul because it's kind of his fault. Not really, because the guy did throw the lantern, but he came back. He feels that blame that he caused it, right? So he's destroyed everyone's world. So it's not just his own world, but now he's destroyed their world. All right. Well, we can't end there, right? We got to have a happy ending. And this happens when we have an epiphany. So every great story has a moment where the character realizes, this is why I'm on the journey. And we're going to talk about the lie journey in just a little bit here. But what happens is that throughout the journey, the hero has been dealing with lies that he believes and truth that should set him free. And at this moment, he starts to realize, oh my goodness, this is why I'm on the journey. And he starts to realize a piece of truth. So our hero here realizes that he stands there and he's looking at this whole family. And he can't believe that he's destroyed everything and that they've lost everything, mostly because he came back. And he starts to think, what if I could save them? What if I could do the right thing? And he runs to this root, this like little tree that was the root of their vines. And it's all burnt to a little crisp. And he thinks, oh no. But he digs it out of the ground and he brings it back. And the father opens it up and he tries to see if there's any life to it. And he says, oh, there is, there's life to it. And Paul has kind of saved the day because he remembered this little piece. And so he is able to restore the family back together. And I think that's a neat thing because he kind of stands outside the family and they're all so devastated. None of them remember that they have because they've been so accustomed to everything that they have lived with. But Paul, who stands outside, remembers the root because he's not a part of that family yet. Because what happens then is that you have, so the father, so the disaster, as well as Paul's bravery and dedication during it, has brought Alberto to realize his errors. So when Paul returns with the plant, Alberto accepts him, telling him that this is his family and his roots. They were sent out to replant and rebuild with the help of their newest members. So what happens is that the father takes the root, opens it up. He's like, yes, it's still alive. And then he cuts it off and he gives it to Paul. And he says, this is your family. This is the root of your family. And you're bound to it by commitment and honor, and go plant this root. And he says, I don't know how. And so then the father turns to the girl, Victoria, and says, teach your husband how to do this. And so then she takes it. And then, of course, everybody's standing around saying, kiss the girl. And it's this lovely, lovely moment. So, and we end with a picture of what he wants, right? His greatest dream. And this is what Alberto has said to him. This is the root of your life. You are bound to this land, this family, by commitment, honor, and love. And so it's this thing where he was an orphan at the beginning, but now he's been on this journey. And he's been forgiven for his dishonor, so to speak. But now he's come back and he has honored them by staying with them, fighting the fire, and loving Victoria and sticking around. Now, they don't really talk too much about the fact that he's going to be the father to another man's child. But that's really not an issue for him because, well, he was an orphan. And I guess it's, you know, it kind of makes sense that he wouldn't care about that. So the story is a very heartwarming story. But what's happened is that we've started with our life. Then we had our inciting incident. Then we had our noble quest. And his noble quest was simply to show up and be a husband, a fake husband to Victoria, to protect her from her family. But what does he do at the end? He's protected her from her family, and he's been grafted into the family, right? So Act 2 was all about the D's, the disappointments. We end Act 2 with the black moment event that happens. And then we have the black moment effect, which is the realization of the epiphany. And then we have the, what we call the final battle, or the thing that he does at the end that he couldn't at the beginning. And that is, you know, she sees him walk away, but what he does is he goes to get the root and he brings it back as sort of an offering. And he says, will you accept this root? And will you accept me? And I'm trying to help. And so then, of course, at the end, we have a happy ending where he's grafted in. So this is the basic structure of every novel. And some novels like move it around a little bit, but you always have a beginning, life, inciting incident, noble quest. You always have stuff that happens in the middle, and you always have a black moment, an epiphany, and a final scene, final new man kind of scene. Now, the climax, so you have that rising action, and your climax often happens right in the black moment time, but you can have a lot of little climaxes as you're going through it, and then the falling action after that. And usually falling action is quite quick, so it can be, you know, 2 chapters, 3 chapters, something like that, just to get them out of the story. But as you're plotting your novels, you should have, this is basic story structure, whether you're writing romance, suspense, thrillers, historicals, general fiction, whatever, it's all the same. Now, that's just the external plot, right? Now we need to go to the internal plot. Now I've got a few questions here that I'm going to just quickly check out and make sure that if anybody has any questions. So we've got a couple of great questions here. One is, so does internal journey start in Act 1, inciting incident, or Act 2? I think you heard you say write both. The internal journey, which we're going to talk about right now, starts at the very beginning. So you're driving that both at the same time that you go through the story. It's a good question. So would the romance thread base be based on different genres? And so your romance depends on what kind of romance you're writing, but the romance thread always contains the 10 things that I'm going to talk to you about and teach you. And you would move those into the story as thickly or thinly as your genre dictates, right? And if you're writing a novella, you might shrink that a little bit and not have quite as much thread, but you would still have these same elements that you're learning. All right, good questions. All right, I think I got them all. All right, if you have any more questions, go ahead. Oh, wait, I do have another one. One more. All right. Oh, somebody just said this is cool. I'm glad you guys are liking it. Good. All right, let's keep going. I hope you're not too tired on a Friday night. All right, so there were 3 threads in a story. The first one we just talked about, the external thread. Now we're going to talk about the inner thread or the inner journey, and then we'll talk about how the romance puts this all together. So as we go forward, now we're going to start our inner journey. Now our inner journey is the reason why we are telling this story. We're not just telling this story to have 2 people get together and make out, or if you're writing a erotica, for them to end up in bed together or whatever. That's not the point of the story. And I think that those that people that write every all the spectrums know that they do. And so it's I've read a lot of great stories that are, you know, maybe okay, I should rephrase. I have read R-rated stories that have a wonderful inner journey. They just add all that extra stuff. So you can have a great, I'm not saying that that's not in those stories, but I am saying that you don't have to have that. And you can still have a great story because you're going to be focusing on that inner journey and meeting those deepest needs, right? All right. So let's talk a little bit about the inner journey. And that is, we're going to start in a place where your character believes the lie. Oh, let me just answer a couple quick questions that came up. Is the internal journey the same as the spiritual journey? Just asking to follow along. Yes. I have named it the spiritual journey in the notes, but it is the internal journey that we're talking about. So yes, good question. And are we on page 7 of the workbook? We are on page 7 of the workbook. Very good. Thank you so much. All right. So as we go into the, as our character walks onto the page, where there's a number of things, steps that he is going to take. And the first thing is he's going to walk on the page with his lie that he believes already intact. Now, the internal journey is all about moving your character from a lie he believes to a truth that sets him free. And it might be his lie might be that, well, I just saw a really interesting Grey's Anatomy, I didn't see last night's, but I saw the one the week before. And I was like, this is a fantastic representation of the lie journey. So if you guys are Grey's Anatomy fans, you would understand this. So Meredith Grey, who's gone through everything you can think of, says to one of her coworkers, people around me die. I don't know what my problem is. I'm cursed. All right. So this is a lie that she believes, based on her history, what she's been through in her life, right? And everybody has lies that they believe. You guys all have lies that you believe based on your history, and hopefully your life is about breaking free of those lies. But we all come with lies embedded based on the experiences that we've had in the past and the bad things that people have said to us and misinterpretations of things and whatever they are. So your character has this as well. He walks onto the page. Maybe he believes that, for example, his job is so dangerous he can't have a woman, you know, in his life. There's people that think that they need to have their whole life put together before they start a romance, right? You know, these sorts of things. And we have to dig deep and say, why do they believe that? Well, maybe it's because someone in their life told them, you're a mess. How can you ever expect to you know, find a girlfriend when you're a mess like that, you know, or whatever. Well, that's not true, but they believe that lie. And the key is that your character has to believe a lie as he walks onto the page. Now I'm going to teach you how to create a great lie in an upcoming session, but think about your own life for a second and just think, what lies do you believe? Or maybe think about a great show that you've loved and you think, okay, what is it that might, what lie does my character believe? Does that character believe in that story? So he walks onto the page with the lie already intact. Now, here's the thing. And we're going to get to some pieces of to illustrate this in a second. But when we start our lies, we don't necessarily believe their lies, right? We believe their truth. We go, oh, of course, I'm cursed. I mean, hello, right? So what happens is that the author has to confirm for the reader and for our hero that the lie is true. So there's something that happens shortly into the story that confirms the lie. And that way, the reader goes, oh, yeah, I can see why he believes that. Now, here's the thing. We all stand outside each other's lies, and so we don't believe the lies. And so if somebody said, you know, if I believe my lie was that I was unlikable, people would say, outside me would say, oh, Susie, that's a lie, right? But if I, you know, I don't know, did something maybe I repelled people. Maybe I said something nasty and my friend was standing right there. She could probably turn to me and go, yeah, you're unlikable, right? And so the idea is that we have to prove for our reader that it is reasonable for our hero or heroine to believe that lie. Not that the lie is real, but that it's reasonable for our hero and heroine to believe it. Because now if it's so unreasonable, like if, you know, beautiful woman says, I'm ugly. Well, we're like, you're not ugly. What are you talking about? But if she looks in the mirror and all she sees is, let's say she was in an accident and all she sees is the scars from the accident, or she had, she grew up and she had like, tons of orthodontic work and she just sees the girl that was pre-orthodontic work, right? So we need to show that that's the way that she sees herself. And, I, you know, this is why I love that. I used to love that show, with Stacy and Clinton, what you wear show or whatever, because they would like get into that. They would like, people would put on clothes and they would see how they saw themselves, right? And they would say, you don't look that way. This is how you look, right? And so that's kind of what we're getting at, is that your character sees himself a certain way, and we're going to confirm that in What Not to Wear. Thank you. So as we move into Act Two now, we've got to fill our hero and heroine with truth. So you're going to have truth tellers that come into the story. Now, the hero and heroine can act as truth tellers to each other, but they also have friends and coworkers and parents and, you know, different people that speak truth into their lives. And you need to litter your story, or I should say fragrant, seed your story is a better word, with truth tellers that will plant truth. And so that at the epiphany moment, they can then harvest that truth and go, oh, yes, I see why I'm on this journey. I see what I'm supposed to believe, right? So getting back to that story about Prince Joe, he thought, okay, I can be with Victoria. Her name was Veronica. I can be with Veronica and we can live happily ever after. But Veronica, the heroine of that book, said, I can't be with someone who is in a dangerous profession. And that comes home to her when the hero nearly gets killed. And she's like, nope. And she breaks up with him. And his heart is absolutely torn apart. And his lie is that he comes from a blue collar family. And his lie is that nobody's going to love me. Right. And when I say blue collar family, I don't mean that nobody can love a blue collar worker. I mean that he came from a blue collar family whose dad was a alcoholic and his mother was a wreck, and it didn't matter that they were blue collar, except that they didn't have a lot of income. And so what happened was that he believed, based on the lies that he'd been taught about the way his parents treated him, that he wasn't worth loving, that he was never going to find someone. And Victoria, the reason that it's important that he was poor is that Victoria is really wealthy and she's very cultured, and he's like on the other spectrum, right? And so that's where the blue collar part comes in. So he thinks, never would a woman like this ever fall in love with a guy like me, right? So when she breaks up with him, guess what? He believes the lie. I'm not good enough for her, right? She believes, I can't be with a guy that's going to get hurt. So in the black moment, she sees that he nearly gets killed, and he's like, oh no, and she says, I can't be with you, right? So the lie feels real for both of them. But the truth is the epiphany. So that's when they break free of the lie. So something happens. And so what, in her case, she actually gets kidnapped. He comes and rescues her. He ends up getting hurt, but all his team is there to help him. And she starts to realize she can't stop bad things from happening to anybody. And so they don't live in a safe world. And his buddies are there to be with him in case something bad happens. And he realizes that Victoria does love him, and that she, and I can't remember what she does to prove that, but the point is that in that story, the epiphany is, yes, I'm worth being loved. And hers is, I can't control bad things, but I can love him anyway, right? So again, it's not a deep, deep story, but it's a truth that sets them both free, which then allows them to love each other, right? And we usually end a great story with something that they can do at the end of it that they can't do at the beginning. And in that particular story, she shows up at his bedside and marries him at his bedside. All right, so let's take a closer look at this. So again, the character starts his inner journey with a lie he believes. And so in this story, A Walk in the Clouds, our hero starts alone at the end. So this is him standing in the square. He gets off the ship. The buddy's like, your wife's going to be here. And it's like, and he's very excited, and he gets down there and she's not there. And it's this wonderful picture of the lie he believes, which is nobody's coming for him. He doesn't belong to anybody. He is an orphan. And that's what he truly believes. Now, if we go further, we have to confirm that story. So this is all the letters that he wrote to her over the 4 years that he was gone, and she didn't open any of them. There's like one or two that got opened. So what did that tell him? He's not important to anybody, right? So that lie is confirmed early on in the story. Then he goes and he meets truth tellers who introduce him to the truth. So he goes to this family, and guess what? He meets Don Pedro. And Don Pedro starts to fill him up with all sorts of truth. Like, you know, it's, you need to stick around and see what'll happen. And you need to, you know, give things time to grow. And he just keeps talking to him about staying in the fight, and that it's worth it. And families aren't perfect, but they're worth sticking around for. And see, I think Don Pedro knows that he's not married. They're not truly married. He knows there's something going on. So he keeps feeding him these ideas of just wait, stay the course, you know, and this sort of thing, right? All right. And then our hero starts to want to believe it. So at this point, the hero starts to believe, I belong to this family. I'm a member of this family. Don Pedro's taken me in. All the family members like me. The dad doesn't, but they'll come. He'll come around. And so he starts to act in the truth, even though he doesn't believe it in his heart. He starts to want to believe it, and he starts to act in it. And usually this happens around the second part of Act Two, right? Our hero starts to embrace the truth. And in this, our hero does this. He starts to, when they have the grape smashing scene, they say, oh, all the married people have to join, right? And so he picks her up and puts it in there, and then he lets the other people put him in there as well, and they're stomping on grapes together, and then they run after a while. There's lots of music and it's romantic, and then they run into her room, and they're you know, making out, and everything's progressing, and he's like, oh wait, and that's when he starts to realize, I can't do this, I'm married, right? But up until that moment, he's acted in this false truth that he belongs in this family. However, as we go further, and in this particular story, we're going to talk about the breakup in just a second, but the breakup happens first, and it's his wounds are open, and he starts to realize, I don't belong in this family because I'm living a lie, which causes him to leave. Now, we have that little moment where he goes home and has his issues with his wife and comes back, and now we have the black moment. And the black moment is all about his greatest fears happening. And so for our hero, it's again that he's come back, wanting to make things right, just like he was at the beginning of this story. When he comes home, he wants to see his wife, and she rejects him. Guess what? He comes back here to the farm and wants to make things right, and the father rejects him. And as an orphan, this is massive. And then he sets all the fields on fire inadvertently. Not him, but he is a part of that, right? And that lie feels real, that he has destroyed this family, and he stands on the outside, and he'll never be accepted, right? All right. So now, however, he realizes when he has this root, he goes and takes a chance. I'm going to get the root. He brings it back. And he kind of holds it out at this as this offering to this grumpy, angry, now destroyed man who takes it. And he says, is there life left in it? And it's kind of like, could you take me back? Is there life left here? Is there anything for me here? And that's when, it's a wonderful little metaphor. And that's when the father opens up the root and says, yes, there's life. And that's when he takes off the root and he hands it to the man. So this, he, you know, our hero at the moment when the whole family is destroyed and they're looking at him, and he's kind of standing off to the distance, and they're looking at him like, what have you done? He could have just ran. He could have been like, this is too big for me. But he doesn't. He lets his heart go. He lets his, let it out, and he runs and gets this root and brings it back. And it's this grand gesture or sacrifice for the woman that he loves, right? So, and at the end, he gets his truest desires. He gets to stay on the farm, and he gets to be there with the people that he loves, right? So this is great, because now we've gone from the lie that he believes, that he is an orphan, to his greatest desires. And the truth is that, and what he has learned from Don Pedro is, it takes effort to be in a family. You have to try to be there. You have to forgive each other. And we see that a lot in the interactions of the family, especially with the father. He's really hard to love. And the mom's like, oh, no, you have to see past him to the person that he truly is, which is part of the message of this story, which is families are challenging and difficult, but you have to stay committed to them to see the fruit, right? And that's what he learns, is that he's not going to run away. He's going to stay committed to them. He's going to put his heart out there. He's going to go get the root and hope that they take him back. And in the end, they do. All right. So story is about going from a lie to a truth. And that's the inner journey of your character. So we've got the external journey, where it's stuff that happens that then causes him on the inner journey to change and grow. Right. And then we've got the romance. All right, so how does the romance fit in? Okay, let's see if we have any questions. Looks like we're doing pretty good here. Good. All right, so where does the romance fit in? The romance combines the external plot of what he wants and the noble quest with the internal journey of truth by adding that heart connection. And here's how. As the hero meets the heroine, his greatest dream and secret desire begins to awaken. So he meets her and he sees that she's a woman in peril a little bit. And she's so afraid of her dad. And he's like, well, I'll just go and I will help you. I will save you, right? I will rescue you. And he sees a woman that truly could appreciate him and truly be someone that, you know, she's a really nice person, much different than his wife, right? And so he's like, I will go and help you. He doesn't have any designs on her at all. He's an honorable guy. He just wants to help her. But he gets to the ranch and immediately the family's like, oh, I can't believe this happened. And there's this wonderful moment where, you know, he says to the father, he says, you know, the father says, what do you do? And he says, I sell chocolate. The father's like, I can't believe it. You know, and he turns away and he turns to Don Pedro, who's the patriarch of the family. And he says, do something. And Don Pedro walks over to Paul, sticks out his hand and says, welcome to the family. All right. So big moment, because he's like, oh my goodness. And this is where he steps into the awakening of his heart, that journey that's going to then, it's stepping into the romance journey, stepping into the awakening of his heart and his greatest desire, right? So at that point, things start to stir. So shortly thereafter, he's sitting at the dinner table and they're, you know, they have the well, how did you guys meet? And they have the crazy conversation about where they each make up something, and it's very, very unclear to everybody how they met. And then the father says, so where are you from? And he says, I'm from Moline, Illinois. And and Victoria says, oh, it's in the middle of Illinois, right? And he says, yes. And so then the mom says, so are your family still there? And he says, no, I'm an orphan. I grew up in a home. Or he says, I grew up in a home. And the father says, well, what kind of home? And he says, an orphan. I'm an orphan home. I'm an orphan home. And I'm an orphan. And the father stops and he says, Victoria can trace her family back to 400 years or something, like, you know, tons of generations or whatever. And she's marrying a man with no past. And he just, he's so, so mean to Paul. But it's this whole moment where Paul realizes, I'm nothing. I have nothing. I have nothing to offer her, and I am nothing. And he's about to leave. And she comes out to him and she says, no, he's really mean and you shouldn't take it that way. And anyway, he ends up staying that night because it's too late for him to leave. And she says, stay till morning. So he stays that night. And that's then when he starts to get roped into the family. So it's, this is where you need to start seeing all the little things that Don Pedro does to bring him in. He shows him up the winery. He gets him involved in cutting the wine or the grapes. Before that, they have the moment in the fields with the trying to keep the frost down. So what happens is that at the longer he's with Victoria, the more he sees, the more he hates that he lied and that he perpetuates the lie. And that's his flaw. At this, you know, it's really interesting. His flaw is even though he's a great guy, his flaw is that he doesn't think it matters that he's going to lie to the father. He's like, I'll just lie to him and I'll leave. And you know, I'm not worth anything. And so who cares if he hates me? And so he doesn't really realize the depth of his lie until he starts to get involved in the family. And then he starts to realize, oh, what I did was really bad. And he starts to, and his growing feelings for Victoria make him really feel terrible. And so you have that tension there. But he's starting to realize, true, that it doesn't matter that, I mean, he wants to have a family. And it does matter that he lied to them. And so he's starting to figure out, he wants to figure out a way to tell him the truth or just keep his promise and leave, right? But it's harder and harder. Now, the breakup happens right when Victoria and he, right after their kissing scene, he realizes, I can't stay. However, before he can leave, and she kind of realizes this too, before he can leave, Don Pedro ropes him into singing a serenade to her and see if she'll come out on the porch. Because Don Pedro is like, you know, you need to see before you leave. And she doesn't. She doesn't come on the porch after he's sung to her over and over again. And he walks away. And he realizes there's nothing left for me here. So it's a sad moment. They actually have another moment after this where he sees her at a festival, kisses her, and then she goes and tells her family that he's left and that maybe that he's not even married. They're not even married. So he walks away, and when he gets back home, the woman that he's been married to is sleeping with someone else, and she's gotten an annulment. And so he's like, oh, this is great. the black moment makes him come back. And what happens is that he's got his heart out there. It makes him realize what he has to lose. The romance is what has propelled him to come back and to face this moment. Oh my, something happened with our slides here. So let's get back to that. Okay. So what happens is romance is causing him to face the black moment. Without the romance, he would not come back, right? So now the romance is taking over all of his motivations, and it's causing him to do the things that he's going to do. And in a great story, you've got that noble quest that starts off, but the more the romance comes alongside, the more the romance takes over and starts to propel him. And at the end, your character is making choices because of the romance, not necessarily because of his noble quest, right? The epiphany makes him realize how much he loves her and what he needs to do to get her back. So then he has the grand gesture, and that is always about the romance. The grand gesture is, how can I prove to this girl that I love her? Right now, we often will combine that with the thing that he does at the end that he can't at the beginning. It might be separate to show his character change, but in a romance, it's often combined. And that's what our hero does, is that he stays the course. He goes and gets the root. He takes the brunt of the punishment, and he hopes that they will accept him. And then the happily ever after ending satisfies the deep longing of his heart by healing his wounds and giving him his greatest dream and his secret desire. So the happily ever after ending is always about the romance and how the romance has healed his wounds. And so in a bromance, you have that as well, by the way, like a buddy movie or something, they'll heal each other's wounds. They'll, you know, Lethal Weapon's a great example of that. But can't think of his name. Danny Glover keeps taking Riggs in and giving him a family and a reason to live, right? So, but in a romance, you have the heroine and the hero doing something for each other. Now, when we talk about the wounds, we're going to talk about wounds in depth, so don't worry. But wounds are the emotional brokenness that that our hero carries onto the page. So he's got his greatest fears, he's got his lies, but his wounds are the emotional pieces. And the emotional pieces are things like he never had a family that loved him. His brokenness is, his wound is opened when the heroine, or when at the beginning, not the heroine, but his wife doesn't even bother to read his letters. His wound is opened again when after he serenades Victoria and she never comes out on the balcony and he realizes that she's not waiting for him. Just like, you know, she's not responding to him, just like his other woman didn't. So that's how the wounds open, right? But our heroine at the climax of the story, when he's trying to, you know, reason with this drunk man, he starts shouting her name, and Victoria gets out of bed and runs in her nightgown to him. And in that way starts the healing of the wounds. Also, the happily ever after ending in a romance also gives us a piece of that secret desire and the greatest dream. Now, in general fiction, you wouldn't necessarily have wound healing as much, but you would have that greatest dream and secret desire, because that's what we're aiming for a happy ending. It's not always the secret desire and greatest dream in full. It might be just a piece of it. Cold Mountain is a great example of this. If you've read that book or seen that movie, it's not necessarily about the romance, it's about the effect of the romance. And so she gets a happy ending, even though she doesn't get her man, right? But it's still a sad story. But in a romance, you've got to heal the wounds and give them a piece of their secret desire and greatest dream. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the faith thread. We had a good question about that. So the faith thread, as we're writing our story, going back to that inner journey, so let's go back to our inner journey. When he has that truth moment, that's when our faith thread really comes in. So it depends on how thickly you want to weave that. But if you want to have truth, as we're dropping truthlets in, you can have that truth take on the form of scripture, or you can have it take on the form of things that, you know, that point him to the Lord, all sorts of different kind of truthlets. And in his epiphany moment, you could have a recognition of his failures as a person. You could have a conversion moment if you want. You could have just prayer. You don't have to have any of that. You could have just a recognition of truth that sets them free, and you can have that truth be, you know, scripture, something like that. So you don't have to, I want to point out that the lie truth journey happens in all books to some extent, even if you're writing secular fiction. If you're writing inspirational fiction, you can put it in as thickly or thinly as you want. But that lie journey is a spiritual journey as well, depending on how you want to couch the truth, how you want to share that truth, right? So if you need follow-up, let me know. But that's basically how it is. All right. Does the wound bring about the lie or the other way around? Okay, we're going to talk about that tomorrow when I talk about the dark moment story, because actually the dark moment story brings about the lie, wounds, and fears. And so that's a great question, and we're going to table it until tomorrow, and you're going to get your answer tomorrow. Do you need POVs from male and female? Yes, well, you don't have to, but a great romance usually has both male and female POVs, yes, because we used to be just women, female POVs, and then we were like, well, we want to hear what the men are thinking, and now there's been more and more that are just male POVs, but normally it's both, right? So, yeah, I didn't really dive into Victoria's journey, because I didn't want to take up too much time, but she has a journey as well. And we're going to have some discussion questions tonight. And after you watch the movie, we'll have some discussion about that tomorrow. In fact, we're going to talk about it a little bit as we start tomorrow, but we're going to talk about it on Facebook. And if you want to show up a little bit early tomorrow at like 8:30 or so, we'll have a loose discussion about that inner journey as well for her. But yes, she needs to have her own inner journey, her own external journey, things that happen. Her journey is one where she realizes that she doesn't have to conform to her father in order to live happily ever after. What she does at the end that she couldn't do at the beginning is she defies her dad and runs after the hero and says, I love him, and puts her heart out there and doesn't care that her dad doesn't love him at all. All right, good question. All right, so let's talk about the two important glue pieces of the romance, and that is the breakup and the happily ever after ending. All right, which we kind of already talked about. Now, every romance has to have a breakup. And why? Well, if I'm going to probably repeat myself here, but we have to know that these two are going to stand the test of time. In real life, we don't necessarily like to have a breakup because we're like, well, why are we breaking up if we love each other? In a romance, we need to have this because, for one, it makes the triumph of true love that much sweeter. If these two have walked away and then they get back together again, we go, oh, they can survive, right? And now we know nothing is going to separate Victoria and Paul, because they have lived through it and they've lived through the test of their fate or their romance, right? Now, the key to a breakup is not external obstacles. We don't break up because we have, you know, a distance or whatever. We break up because we cannot get past our wounds. You know, so if Victoria never ran after Paul, if Paul never came back for Victoria and walked away, these two would never get together. So even if Paul had come back and Victoria said, you know, no, I don't, you know, she never came back to him, well, they wouldn't get back together. They have to have that grand gesture for each other. And that's what, and, you know, we talked about his grand gesture, but hers is running to him. But the wound is the fact that she rejected him when he went and put his heart out there. And he was like, nope. That's it. I'm rejected and I'm walking away. Right. And for her, her wound was she was ready to take this guy to bed. And which, you know, let's remember that Victoria is pregnant with another man's child. So clearly this is some behavior that she's done previously. She was ready to take Paul to bed with her and maybe keep him forever if she could. And he says, no, I'm married. I can't do that to you. And he walks away from her and leaves her utterly rejected and probably feeling a little bit, you know, less than honorable, right? And which is a little bit how her father has made her feel, you know, that she's not necessarily, you know, she's disgraced the family, right? So Paul's made her feel a little bit that way. He doesn't really say it. He's very nice about it. But as she kind of deals with her pain, she kind of realizes, what have I done? You know, I'm not, I need to, and so he opens her wounds. And so what happens is that we reach a point in the romance where We know what his wounds are. We know what her wounds are. And out of fear, they reopen each other's wounds, and that causes the breakup. However, we can't leave them like that. We need to have them come back together, right? And so this is after the breakup. And you can have a breakup and then a black moment and then the epiphany and then getting them back together. You might also have like a breakup and an epiphany, you know, the true love, and then maybe have getting back together. And then maybe you have a black moment. That can happen as well. You can arrange it any way you want. You might have a black moment and then the epiphany, but then maybe, or maybe you have a black moment and a breakup after that. And then maybe the epiphany and true love, something like that. Usually you don't have an epiphany and then a breakup, because usually when you have an epiphany, you've changed and become a new person. So usually I move the epiphany down after the breakups and after the black moments, so that they can then change and do their grand gesture and that sort of thing. But what happens is that after the breakup, there has to be a realization of true love, right? So in your hero has somebody he talks to. He goes and does something when he realizes something about some sort of truth. What happens is that once your hero and heroine get alone, they go, oh, wait, what have we done? This person brings out the best in me. And we're going to talk about the way fools fall in love. And these are what they're going to remember, is how they made them into better people, how they completed each other, how they were exactly right for each other, the way that they loved each other unconditionally, these kind of things. And they're going to remember it through conversations with other people that they might have. In this case, Paul goes home and he finds Betty in bed with this other guy, right? And he's realizing, this is not what marriage looks like. This is not worth fighting for. And then Betty, she has applied for an annulment and she gives it to him. And she's like, please don't be mad. And he's like, I'm happy. He's so, so happy at that moment, right? So for him, he realizes true love doesn't do this to each other. True love makes you feel wanted. And he realizes he needs to go fight for the woman he wants. And so he realizes he truly loves her and he has to go fight for her. All right. So he returns there. Then once you, so you've got your breakup, you've got your realization of true love. And then in order to prove it, we need a sacrifice or a grand gesture. We need your hero to do the big thing and the heroine to also do the big thing. They both have to do something. So whether it's running after, he shows up, he saves, you know, he fights with the dad, argues, and then he's like, Victoria, and he runs and tries to get her attention. She wakes up, runs to him. Then, of course, we have the massive fire, and then he has that moment where he's like, if I want to stay in this family, I gotta stay committed. I gotta do something. And that's where he goes and gets the root. So that sacrifice and grand gesture is our romantic triumph. It's, I'm putting my heart out here for you, and I will see if you will take it back, right? So it's very important to have that piece. It can be in conjunction with the final battle, that thing he does at the end that he can't at the beginning. It can be separate, but you need to have it in there. So that's the difference between, say, a general fiction and a romance, is that they might do something, they will do something at the end they couldn't do at the beginning, but the sacrifice and grand gesture is directly related to the romance and getting the love of their life back. So that brings it closer into the romance piece. All right. So as we're talking about a romance, down on the bottom, we have our external struggle, or our external spine, okay, so the forces that are going to move us forward. We have our internal struggle, which is all the things he believes and all his values and how he's going to change. And the romance lays on top of it, okay? And you have these pieces that go on top, where the guy meets the girl, they have the why not, which we're going to talk about tomorrow. Why should they fall in love? Why shouldn't they fall in love? We have the breakup and the happily ever after ending. And all of those, that lays on top of it to help it, help you move your character forward in through essential scenes and through helping them stir up what they want and those greatest desires inside of them, those secret desires inside of them, help them understand that, you know, have the breakup, and so that they can understand their flaws and who they are and how they have to change, so that they can change and grow into a different person. So that's why we have to combine our external plot and our internal plot with our romance, so it can work together. And I know that right now you're like, huh? But you're going to see this a lot more as we move forward. All right, so how do we find all the pieces of this story? Now that we've got our external, our internal, our romance, what are we going to do? First, we're going to do is we're going to create real characters with real issues from the inside out. So this is a lot of times the biggest challenge is how do I make sure my characters don't sound like everybody else and aren't flat and all those kind of things? Well, we're going to, tomorrow, we're going to talk about how to do that. I have a something called the SEQ. It's a story equation, and it's a really cool way to talk to a character and dig out all those pieces we need in order to have show his transformation and to meet the greatest desires of his heart. So we're going to create that. Then we're going to start with the happily ever after ending. So we're going to shoot for what we want, and then we're going to work backwards to create our three threads. Okay, which I know you're thinking, well, wait a second, I'm a pantser. I don't want to have to know what the ending is. Well, you kind of need to know what the ending is. You don't have to plot everything. I'm going to let you pants it if you want, but I'm going to give you some essential pieces so that you can kind of figure out how you want to write your story and give you an idea of what you're shooting for at the end. It doesn't have to be exactly that thing, but you want to know where are you heading? What is his greatest dream? What is his wound? How are you going to heal it? What might be the black moment event, right? Then we're going to add some love. We're going to understand, I'm going to teach you the romance structure of your romance and how each person's story is a little bit different depending on the who your characters are and what their black or dark moment story is in the past and the journey that they have to go on, right? So we're going to talk about the romance structure, and then we're going to wind all of these threads together and all of the elements of a romance together, and we're going to insert them in using all of these essential scenes and secret elements that are going to go together. So this is kind of the process that we're going to go through. We're going to start with it. First, I'm going to talk a little bit about the characters and how to create them. Then we're going to talk about our endings and a little bit of structure. Then we're going to talk about how to put your particular romance together, wind the threads together, and then we're going to insert all the scenes. All right. So now we have a little bit of time for some questions, if you guys have any. And but now here's your assignment. I want you to watch A Walk in the Clouds, if you possibly can tonight. If you've already watched it, perfect, that's great. But what I want you to do is I want you to answer these questions to the best of your ability, because tomorrow we're going to talk about them at the beginning. And I'd love to have a couple of volunteers who might be willing to talk about it with me. And we're going to put it on Facebook. So I'm going to put these questions on Facebook, and you can kind of answer them as you go through the story. And I really want you to think about, what does Paul want? What does Victoria want and why? What is their secret desire? We've talked about it a lot with Paul, but I want you to look at Victoria. What is their goal at the beginning of the story? How does their romance start to meet their secret desire? So I want you to look at all those pieces in Act Two, where there's little tiny things that happen that start to awaken and meet those secret desires that they have. Why do they break up? What sacrifice do each of them make to be together? We're going to see that, but I really want you to kind of see it. How do they get their secret desires, and how are their wounds healed in the end? And we're going to talk about this a little bit in the first session tomorrow. Now, if you've already seen Walk of the Clouds and you can already answer these questions pretty easily, then you may want to watch a different movie. Cutting Edge, I put up today, would be a really good one to watch because that has a lot of these elements in it. Again, an old movie, but still such a great movie. Or if you have, if you want to watch a movie and you don't know what some of these things are, like let's say you've watched, I don't know, While You Were Sleeping, or I don't know, whatever other movie, well, maybe it's a recent movie, and you're like, what are these elements? Go ahead and post them in the Facebook page, and maybe somebody else can answer them, and I will try to answer them, and we can kind of try to nail that down. The key is I really want you guys to start seeing these elements, because when you're writing a romance, these are the pieces that we're really looking at. In terms of those things that will deliver the happy ending, that feeling of romance that we are looking for when we read or when we watch. And so I want you to start really looking for these elements. What do they want? Why? What is their secret desire? What is their goal? How do they start to meet each other's secret desires? What is the wound, right? And the breakup, and then how was the grand gesture at the end? All right. Good. All right, so tomorrow we will be here. I will be here a little bit early. If you have any, you're on Pacific time. Okay, that's fine. Yes, you will. As soon as we have the recordings, well, we'll yes, I'm hoping to have them all up by Monday. So, but we may be able to get them before then. So we will, but so yes, you will be able to view it, no problem. And we'll get it up as soon as we can. We might even be able to get it up tomorrow morning. We'll see. So yeah, don't worry if you're a little late, that's fine. So get coffee and go ahead and come in your jammies, and that's fine. Let's see here, another question. Oh, you're welcome. All right, you guys, thank you so much for being here. I know we're leaving a little bit early, but that's good. You give you time to watch your show, and I will see you tomorrow at 9 o'clock Central Time. Same link right here. And if you have any problems, call that phone number or email us or let us know. We'll be standing by to help you. Thanks so much for being here, you guys. Go watch a movie, enjoy yourselves, and we will see you tomorrow night.